Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/plainlabel. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Kindle, Android, or MP3 player. Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, Podshots. Welcome to another episode of Podshots. I'm your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are discussing the 2009 film Moon, based on a story by Duncan Jones. The film was written by Nathan Parker and directed by Duncan Jones and stars Sam Rockwell and the voice of Kevin Spacey. Here to discuss the film with me, I'm very pleased to say, is one of my favorite guests, Mr. Sean Pryor.
Thank you. Thank you again for having me on the show, Eric. I really appreciate it. I always enjoy being on Podshots, and I'm looking forward to talking about this.
Me too. Before getting into our discussion, though, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. So, Sean, this is a little morning recording, which is a bit on the odd side for us, but drink roll call action. What do you have for me drink-wise?
Well, this morning I have a tall glass of a Tropicana orange juice with pulp. No ice, because I want to enjoy the pulp. Pulp on the ice is not a good thing. And I put a small splash of vodka in it.
Oh, nice.
Because actually I've never done that before, so I wanted to try it.
Well, there you go.
So that's what I am enjoying this morning.
Well, I think this might be a first, but I am actually not having anything alcoholic for the show. I know. I literally think in the two years plus that we've done it, I think this is the first time. But I'm just having a glass of coffee with a little Girl Scout cookie thin mint in there for the creamer. Nice. So with that, let's begin our discussion of the 2009 film Moon.
Sam Bell reporting to Central. Everything running smoothly. Over and out. Rock and roll. God bless America.
Good morning, Sam. Do you want me to cut your hair then?
Lunar Industries remains the number one provider of clean energy worldwide due to the hard work of people like you.
Three years is a long haul, you know.
I know you're really lonely up there, but I'm proud of you.
2 weeks to go, Sam.
2 weeks to go, buddy.
I'm going home.
Looks like we got a live one. I'm gonna go out.
Okay, Sam. You're imagining things.
What's going on?
Where did he come from? Why does he look like me?
You've been up here too long, man. You've lost your marbles.
2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks.
I don't understand what's happening. This is my mind. I want to go home.
I know.
And the IMDb plot synopsis of the film is as follows. With only 3 weeks left in his 3-year contract, Sam Bell is getting anxious to finally return to Earth. He is the only occupant of a moon-based manufacturing facility, along with his computer and assistant, Gertie. The long period of time alone, however, has resulted in him talking to himself or to his plants. Direct communication with Earth is not possible due to a long-standing communication malfunction, but he does get an occasional message from his wife, Tess. When he has an accident, however, he wakes to find that he is not alone. He also comes to realize that his world is not what he thought it was. So, before getting into the discussion, I would like to say that this is going to be a heavy, spoiler-filled discussion. Because, it's difficult to even approach the topic of this film without spoiling what happens. So, if you have yet to see Moon, or if you just are kind of like me and it's like, oh, whatever, it's not about the twists and turns, it's about how they're done. But you may want to pause it if you haven't seen the film. So, Sean, we talked a little bit about this before recording, but how is it that that you came to this film, and how is it that that we're here? Like, what are you what's the situation with you and Moon?
Well, many moons ago, no pun intended, I had heard of this film. And it seemed like a really interesting concept, and it had the feel, as far as like from the trailer and from still shots that I had seen, it had the feel of a 70s or early 80s sci-fi film. And, and that was during an era where science fiction films could go from all the way from pure science fiction to pure science fiction camp / fantasy. So you never knew what you were going to get, but this had a very scaled back approach to it. I mean, and so I was really interested because I liked the set design, and you could kind of tell that it wasn't going to be like this sprawling film per se, but it just really, really caught my eye, and I just never had the opportunity to watch it. Or if I did have the time, I would forget about it and I wouldn't watch it. So years later, Eric sends me a private message and says, hey, you want to talk movies again? I'm like, sure, no problem. And he brings up Moon, to which it just lights a fire in my brain. I'm like, oh, I finally get an opportunity to watch Moon now without having to constantly remind myself or forget. So I was very, very anxious and excited to watch this movie. And I'm glad that I did.
Good. I came across this through the very popular film review show Film Spotting, and it was one of their golden bricks, is what they call it. But it's one of their underseen, or maybe kind of the under the radar sort of films. And in 2009, this was the winner for the golden brick for that year, to where they felt like it was a film that not enough people were paying attention to. So I got it, as soon as I could through Netflix, and has since, purchased the Blu-ray and seen it a few times, but it's one that, it's kind of a film that doesn't immediately come to mind when someone's asking for a recommendation to me. But I think that with the right audience, I feel like it's really an effective film. I really kind of enjoy it. So I guess getting into the discussion itself, I think that, one of the things that I really like about it is I'm so happy that it's almost stage play-ish, and that there's so few players in this. And I just kind of love the setup of it's a man alone in this long mission, and what's he going to do? Like, I really like that initial premise. And then one of the things, I actually, for a little bit of a change, I have quite a few questions on here, and it's not necessarily questions that I'm expecting you to answer. It's like, explain it to me, Sean. But I just wonder, I don't usually have so many questions in my notes, but my first question was, do you think that there's any significance to the fact that, the harvesters, there's four of them, and they all have, biblical names. It's the first four names of the New Testament. And because they're Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are the names. And I was kind of wondering, like, I don't know if I think that has any special significance, or, with the way that, with what happens in a little bit that we'll get to, where he's not, with the aspect where he's not alone. I don't know if that plays into the religious side of things at all, or what do you think of that?
It possibly could. Because the funny thing is that I sincerely didn't think about that until you mentioned it, because I was so caught up in watching the environment and everything surrounding the environment for clues that was the one that was right in my face that I paid no attention to whatsoever, because only thing I thought of was that these two harvesters aren't working. That's all I kept thinking about when I saw that screen, and I'm like, you don't have to remind me, because we know, and that Eliza crew is coming to clean it up. So I focused more on the arrival clock than I did on the actual names for the harvesters. But that's actually a really brilliant point, though. I think that's cool. And there may be nothing to it all, but there could be something to it. So I never thought of that at all. I think, and I'm not trying to sidestep your question.
No, go ahead.
I think the thing that helps this movie, especially with like a lot of pure science fiction films, say for instance, a film like Alien. Mm-hmm. Alien is a pure science fiction film. Even like stuff like Outland with Sean Connery from way back when.
Sure.
The thing that really helps Moon is that it answers your question as to why Sam Bell is on the moon in 60 seconds.
Yeah.
You get the Lunar Industries infomercial and boom, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
You're done. That's all you need to know. And now you can concentrate on Sam Bell, having 2 weeks left to do his job so he can go home. But the things that like really caught my eye, I'm still trying to figure out the ghost.
I have that as a question later also. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out the ghost, because in the film, while Sam is working on something, he goes to get he was watching, I think, Bewitched, because he's on a limited feed as far as what he can watch, what he can receive, sending messages and receiving messages. There's no live time. Mm-hmm. It's just all planted. And he's watching an episode of Bewitched. He turns Bewitched off and he goes to get some hot water. He looks back at this chair he's sitting in, which is something else. I'll get to this in a second. But he's looking at this chair again while he's trying to get a cup of hot water. And there's a lady sitting in the chair.
Right.
And you don't know why she's sitting in that chair. And he kind of freaks out.
Because then he burns himself. Yes.
And he burns himself. And he ends up seeing that same image later before he wrecks the harvester.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, those are the only two times you see that image.
Uh-huh.
So I don't like – I'm still trying to figure out what is that from.
Okay. Now, so we'll go ahead and get into the spoiler territory. So
okay.
What I thought that was I don't know because I haven't looked at them close enough, but I looked at that as it being his daughter.
Okay.
Because when you see his daughter later at the end of the film, that's sort of what she looks like, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so I took it as like somehow he's getting a sense of that. And then, but my main question is that him at home in the background talking? Because she says, Dad, there's someone asking about Mom.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't specifically show him. But then if he's there, like what is his place then in the corporation? Like, is he, a higher up who just said, well, we can make these clones and they can be me because I trust myself to do this mission.
Right.
Or
could have been something where he was the first person to actually do the mission in real life while they were working on the process of cloning.
Sure.
I mean, this is what really good science fiction does. It makes you ask a shit ton of questions.
There you go. Yeah.
And it opens up all these possibilities to allow you to have these types of conversations. There's no, okay, this happened and then this happened and this equals this, the end. Really good sci-fi leaves things, I don't want to say open-ended, but it leaves things to interpretation in a good way.
Sure. Well, and the end of this film, I mean, we can discuss it later, in more detail, but the end of this film definitely does that as well.
Yes. You know? Oh, yeah. Fully agree.
Yeah. So yeah, that's one of the things I had earlier as well, was the sort of what I was referring to them as kind of glitches in his programming started beginning, with the him watching TV and the girl there. Because if it's not the daughter, I don't know who it was and why that would be significant at all. It's just some person.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I would probably go the same path as you and say it was possibly the daughter. I was also trying to figure out the two shows that he was watching. He watched Bewitched, and he was also watching an episode of Mary Tyler Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's weird is that around the time he's watching Mary Tyler Moore, that's also around the time that the second clone arrives. You know, that the second clone is already there.
Mm.
And so maybe I'm thinking too deep with this, but if you remember Mary Tyler Moore, Mary Tyler Moore is about, you know, a lady, Mary, who in her job, and it was a journalism, TV journalism, if I'm not mistaken, because it's been so long since I watched that damn show. It was like a fight for independence. I mean, it was a sitcom, but it was about, hey, I'm trying to be independent. I'm trying to show you I can do the job just as well as everybody else. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so please respect me. And it had a cast full of characters, you know, cranky folks and happy folks. And, you know, it just, you know, it's your typical sitcom, but it was built around the theme of independence, for women.
Sure.
But in this situation, you have a character of Sam who is struggling to get that independence, to really find out who he is once the other clone shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And even then you have a thing where the other Sam clone has anger management issues.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, and say for instance on Mary Tyler Moore, Mary's boss, played by Ed Asner, had anger management in a punching bag, but still, like, you know, I picked up those similarities there. But they were just, see, there's all types of stuff in this movie that just make me question everything. Like, out of all the chairs, like everything in this film on that set, in that lunar base, everything is so sci-fi, but that chair is a relic.
Yeah.
You know, and it sticks out like a sore thumb, but I mean, I know there's a reason and a purpose for it, but it fits.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks, you know, and it's one of those things where you don't get a look at, I guess in a lesser film, I could see where something like the chair could be more obvious when he calls home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he calls home and the girl gets up and it happens to be like the same chair or something. You know what I mean? To where it like puts a little bit of a neater little bow around it. And I kind of am glad to where it's like, well, why is this one chair here? Like, what is, you know, it's not anything about the plot. It's just like a little bit of set design where I'm like, wow, that's interesting.
Yes.
I like that. So we get, once we get Sam waking up and we see that there's a missing suit and one of the vehicles is missing, to where now this is the clone who doesn't know he's a clone, and, you know, the big reveal hasn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
And he decides he's going to go check things out. It was right at that point I was like, huh, well, something's up, because we know that one of the vehicles has wrecked. And then when this Sam goes to check it out, you know, it's not there.
Right. And he had the only reason he could check it out is because he staged an accident in the lunar station in order to get outside, because the company that he works for, who doesn't talk to him directly, but sends him delayed messages.
Mm-hmm.
Although this same company talks to Gertie, the computer voiced by Kevin Spacey, in direct live time, you know, tells Sam he can't go outside. So he stages this incident. He's like, look, I have to go outside to make sure there's no leaks or anything like that. And he goes outside, and you're right. I'll let you continue. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. And so then it was at that point I was like, well, whoa, what's going on? Because, you know, the first time watching it, I was like, well, something's up. Like, you know, in the world of science fiction, it could have been anything. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's what I like about it is, you know, and I kind of wished that I hadn't seen, the trailer frankly, before watching the film.
Okay.
Because there's scenes where, you know, he's carrying a body in and he's like, who is he? You know, and stuff like that. And you can kind of extrapolate that it's like, okay, well, he's probably, in this instance, it's probably a cloning thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like they don't really hide it too much,
yeah.
I guess. But, and I guess that's something that they sort of have to do in a smaller budget film is you kind of need to sell the audience on the movie. So you can't be too secretive about it. You know,
yeah.
You kind of have to give away some things. But I do like how he goes and, you know, saves the day and saves the, what we view as the original one. And I like that, you know, the original one who had been seeing the visions has the burn so you can tell who's who really easily.
Mm-hmm.
Not only by their personalities, but just physically. And, one of the things that I had written down was that I really like the idea of the newer one with the anger management issues. I like how he's kind of studying the original.
Yes.
And he's just watching him. And then I like the idea of that there can be more than one of you, but you may not necessarily like each other and you may have distinctly different personalities.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that idea is really interesting.
Oh, yeah. And the more I think about it, I really do think that the original Sam actually did what was in outer space for the simple fact that those messages, even though that they're constantly just they've been replayed over the span of, you know, 9 to 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are the original messages.
Sure. Okay.
You know,
yes.
You know, for Sam. So I think the original Sam was up there for 3 years to get things going. And probably, you know, and maybe he had a couple people help. Who knows? But, he was up there for 3 years and then came home and, you know, and he's home with his daughter. You know, he's been home with his daughter ever since because like you know, the thing that got me and I'm sure and it was obvious when he's watching that first, when you get to watch that first, video of Sam's wife and she's talking about a birthday, Eve's birthday. And then it cuts, you know, halfway through.
Oh, yes.
You know, something's up right there. I mean, it's planted for you. So it just makes me wonder, like, how many more conversations where the company, corporation cut things up because things were out of date already or already out of context and edited these things together to make this plausible to a clone.
Yeah, to make it more timeless.
Mm-hmm.
Where she could have made some reference to something.
Yes.
You know, and I'm glad that, you know, we can, you know, extrapolate and figure that out. It's not specifically, you don't get her side of the story with them saying, oh, no, you cut, we have to cut that out. Or, mm-hmm. You know, it's only his point of view, and I like that. One of the things, getting away from the plot a little bit, it's obviously a tour de force Sam Rockwell performance, you know, with mm-hmm. it, with him playing the two different roles. I do think that his clone, let's see, he's listed as Sam Bell clone and, the actor is Robin Chalk.
Yes.
And he is, you know, I'm assuming that they're just having them in the same space and then they, you know, just for someone for Sam Rockwell to look at and to act opposite of. And then, you know, he goes back and they flip sides and then he does the other half. But anyway, I think that the camera work with this whole stuff is really well done. Like when they're playing ping pong against each other and when they're just interacting with each other, it doesn't feel like it's, a lot of movie magic. It just feels like there's two people there and they're just look the same.
Right. You're not watching Multiplicity.
Right. I was thinking about Multiplicity earlier when I said the different personalities thing.
You're definitely not watching Multiplicity when you watch Moon. It feels natural.
Mm-hmm.
It feels natural. And I think that helps because this could have been a hokey sci-fi movie.
Sure.
In a heartbeat. It could have jumped to the, I'm the real Sam. No, I'm the real Sam. And we have a fight to the death to find out. And I'm glad it didn't go there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad what happened was that both clones just kept investigating. Yes, they had their issues, but, you know, they still saw through them and they kept growing together and learning a little bit more about each other and themselves in order to get even further.
Sure. Yeah, I like that. You know what? I just, when you were saying that, what it made me think of is how I wished the Spider-Man clone stuff mm-hmm. would have been a little tighter like this.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like it's a really interesting idea, and especially in the world of superheroes, like it could be a really interesting concept, but the way that that just kind of spun out of control, no pun intended there, but was kind of a shame, actually.
Well, I think with stuff like that, it's just due to the amount of content and how long do you want something like that to go? Whereas opposed to Moon, there is one script.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just one script. That's it. It's not an ongoing series that can change directions at any time. It's just one script, one story, three chapters or three acts, and that's it.
Sure.
And so that's why you're able to get something, you know, that's much more developed, much more honest than something like the Spider-Clone saga.
Sure. Now, here's another question that I have for you is, so Gertie's the one that wakes up the clones.
Yes. Right?
So I'm assuming that they have some kind of a heart monitor on them, that Sam would have something to where, you know, it's evident when they're dead.
Yes.
So why do you think that Gertie woke up the second clone?
Because I think the thing is, I think it's a couple of things, because Gertie's been doing this for so long. When the first Sam in the film gets into that wreck,
mm-hmm.
you know, you don't know when the first Sam gets into that wreck, one thing that you constantly hear is that the satellite feed or the satellite signal, you know, there is no satellite signal.
Right.
So what happens is that when the wreck happens and Gertie doesn't hear from Sam, it's just standard protocol. Mm. Or it could be that Gertie is more sentient than we think Gertie is. And then when this happens, Gertie's like, you know what? We've been playing with these Sam clones for over 12, like for over, if the original Sam was there for the first 3 years, we've been playing with these Sam clones for like 9 years. You know what? Let's just mix it up a bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like, and Gertie says, I'm still going to do my job. I'm still going to contact the company, but I'm going to protect Sam and we're going to see what happens. And the thing is throughout all that, it's Gertie's job to protect Sam at all costs. And Gertie never tells on Sam.
Right. What I like about that character, if you want to call it that, is I like that, it's kind of the anti HAL 9000.
Yes.
You know, because yes. I kept watching it in Kevin Spacey, who I think does a really good job with his line readings. He is, you know, he's doing the Hal voice a little bit because
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, very monotone. But the way that that came off is I kept being suspicious of Gertie.
Yeah, and I can see that too.
Yeah, and I don't think that that's, you know, I don't mean that as a negative thing. It just kind of like, I was always, ooh, like what exactly is going to happen? Because we got these two guys and one's sick and one's kind of a jerk and we got Gertie who, you know, I'm not sure about, you know.
Right.
So well, I like that.
Well, see, the thing is we're so used to to conventional cinema. We expect Gertie to turn all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're just so used to conventional cinema standards and conventional film standards. I mean, but I'm glad it didn't. Once again, I'm glad it didn't go there. Something else about Gertie that I also liked is the fact that they used emoticons.
Yeah, I thought that was very endearing, actually.
Yeah, you know, they had all types: the happy face, the sad face, the I don't know face, the.
Yeah, the worried one with the squiggly mouth, I think, is my favorite one.
Yeah, the one I love the most is the one like, I don't know, you know, and the mouth would be on one side, then flip to the other side,
yeah.
flip to the other side. That was my favorite one.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, I really feel that Gertie did that and activated the second clone. Not, well, one, because of standard protocol, but two, I really think Gertie wanted to see what would happen. Because the thing is that Gertie could have ended all of that if Gertie wanted to, but Gertie didn't. Even to the point where after the two clones are together, and you know, and they're together, you can tell, and you can tell that the other one's starting to get real sick, and this all plays into that 3-year thing because you know they start to really just lose it and get sick to the point of death, because that means the clone's lifespan is starting to end, so they get evaporated.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's just the 2 weeks that they can make it, right? Because yeah. With the video logs, there was a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And if they actually made it the whole 3 years, that would only be two.
Right, it is true. Yes, that is very, very true. So, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. So, yeah, 2 weeks more than likely, yes.
Yeah, when they're doing the just 2 weeks left and 2 weeks, buddy, you know, from the trailer.
Yeah, that is true.
So because I was like, that was the thing where I was kind of like, oh, really? When they said that it had only been 9 to 12 years or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, really? I had expected it to be like hundreds of years or something.
Right, right.
Because when they, you know, when he's calling and she said that that was, you know, we discover it's Eve, the daughter. I would have expected it to be like at least like a granddaughter or a great granddaughter or something. But when they said it was the daughter, I was like, oh, really? They just chose to. This is still sort of in the beginning stages because they had plans for this to go for years with a huge storage of other clones down there in sort of secret room.
Yeah, the 2 weeks make sense now. Because if you're doing it 3 years at a time, then you wouldn't really need a vast cavern of clones.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that changes everything. Yeah, that makes much more sense.
Yeah, do you think that it's because they because I was doing a little bit of looking up on the trivia at IMDb for this, and it was talking about how the clones are deteriorating, but that is a on purpose thing. It's not that I took it as they weren't properly created, and so they just, you know, just start to deteriorate.
Yeah, I took it like that too.
Yeah, and I guess it's because it's a corporation thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so I haven't listened to the commentary, and I believe there's either two or three different commentaries on the Blu-ray for this. And I guess they talk about how the clones are given high doses of radiation, and that's what makes them break down.
Oh, okay.
And so that's why they only want them for a couple of weeks.
Hmm.
So, and that makes the end, spoilers again, but that makes the end when he gets away and he's there with, all of that cache of the harvest with him, that when he gets away and he has all of that again, in the trivia only, but that he could sell, and it's supposed to be worth like $1.5 million,
mm-hmm.
that he could live a little bit longer than just a couple of weeks.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, well, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yes. Yeah. That like, once again, it's something else that changes the entire perspective of the film. Because in my head, I had it locked in that for some reason that they lived for about a lifespan of 3 years.
Yeah.
And so in my mind, when the other Sam clone escaped to Earth, and also before he left, he broke one of those satellite blockers.
Oh, yeah. He had it run over. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which opens up the game because now there are all these transmissions about all these clones and all this other stuff, and Lunar Industry stock starts to dip and starts all these problems. But still, now I'm starting to think about it. It's like, well, how long would Sam, you know, that escaped have to live?
Yeah. And what's funny is, you know, if it is a thing where the original one did this mission and then went home and then raised his daughter, and you know, if he has a higher place in the company, like my guess was,
mm-hmm.
then he's kind of screwing himself over. Like the clone is making the guy's stock just drop.
Right.
By, you know, exposing things. And so you're kind of like, well, good, because the original one's a real jerk for having all these clones up there and that are him that are dying or being, you know, disintegrated or whatever you want to call it. And so I don't know, that's just, like, there's just a lot to kind of dig into about this film,
Oh, so much, yeah. Even to the point where Gertie continues to open up that can of worms, mm-hmm. and helps the sick Sam clone access the Sam Bell data.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I love that sequence. You know, because I see Gertie coming up and I'm like, oh shit. You know, he's in trouble now, and it's him, Gertie puts in the password for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to see all of the other instances of him dying, basically.
Yes. And once again, it could have been one of those things. Could have been like conventional American cinema. Gertie says, we've had enough. You've went too far. Time for you to die. Nope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Gertie's like, I'm going to let you die on your own time. And I'm going to let the other Sam escape. And I'm not going to tell because I'm going to let you reboot me. And I'll forget. No problems, because it's my job to take care of you.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's to me, this is kind of like this could all, you know, also be in the vein of a the gentleman who directed the Fantastic Mr. Fox,
a Wes Anderson film.
Yes. It in some aspects it plays like a more tightly done Wes Anderson film. I mean, Duncan Jones did an incredible job with this movie.
Yeah, Duncan Jones, who, you know, his name is, he's probably better known for being David Bowie's son.
Really?
Yeah, his name is Zowie Bowie. It's David Bowie, I guess is how you say it. But it's Duncan Jones is his professional name.
Huh.
And this is his directorial debut, and he's also done Source Code with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Source Code is a very good movie.
Yeah. I like that.
It was improperly marketed for sure, but it's a good film.
Yeah, that's a real shame. Like, I think that, you know, the guy has done two films. He's done this and Source Code, and neither one of them have been very big hits.
Right. But see, but these movies have had a great aftermarket life.
Sure.
Like Moon has, and Source Code did very well. As far as like Netflix and rentals and even store purchases, it's done well. So, and then his next film, he's doing the World of Warcraft movie.
Oh, is he really? That's an interesting choice.
Yeah, and that's a pretty big deal, seeing that, like, normally from Hollywood's perspective, the two movies that he has done have received critical acclaim, but they haven't received box office acclaim. And so I'm really surprised that the studio has him listed as a director, because, you know, typical Hollywood thinking is, if you don't have hits, why do I take a chance on you?
Sure.
You know, oh, it's okay. It's all right. No problem. But, you know, why do I take a chance on you when you haven't had a hit? But he puts together beautiful movies, though.
Yeah, he sure does. Yeah, I didn't know that he was doing that. What a freaking long haul he has, because he's in pre-production with the World of Warcraft film, and it comes out in 2016.
Yeah.
So, wow, that's a lot to... I mean, that's a long time.
Yes. Well, think about it. I mean, it's based off of a game that so many people have played and know, and you got to develop a story. Mm-hmm. you can have the most beautiful visuals in the world, but if you don't have a story, you're screwed.
I'm surprised that that's not a McG Brett Ratner sort of assignment.
No,
you know, because that's sort of what they would typically go for, I would think.
Sometimes, yeah, but I think in a case like this, I think they know. Hopefully, the studio understands that you have to have someone that truly understands what they have in the realm of fantasy, like with McG. With McG or Brett Ratner, like, you know, we know what films Brett Ratner is capable of, and we've seen what happens when he gets sloppy seconds. Perfect example, X3. Oh,
terrible.
There are moments in X3 that I like. The film as a whole has loads of issues.
Yes.
But that's what happens, though, when things change and one director takes off to go do a tribute film to Richard Donner. You know, in Superman Returns.
Sure.
Which is another hot mess.
It's also not very good. Yeah.
God. Which then led us to, to the the most beloved or hated film in recent ages, Man of Steel. Anyway, but that's another talk for another
time. Sure.
but no, just getting back to it all, I just really think that Duncan Jones has the ability to make the character as important as the environment.
Mm.
And like with Moon's a perfect, once again, it's a perfect situation where you could have been caught up in all the sci-fi-ness of it, you know, like all, you know, the moon terrain travel, the harvesters, and all, you know, all this, the bells and whistles stuff. He could have had you caught up in all of that and you would just, you know, not care about the clone story, but he was able to make a humanistic story around the science fiction. And yeah. he was able to stay on point from beginning to end.
Right. And I think all of the commentary that, he may or may not have in there with the biblical references, with the, you know, what is the original person's place in the world and all of that, like all of that is all character based,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I had thought about, people who listen to the show would know that I like to try to read into as much as possible, but you know, I have the four harvesters with the biblical names, the daughter named Eve, you know, the countdown clock being equivalent to like the end of the world for this character, you know, mm-hmm. all of that kind of stuff may or may not be significant consciously, but it's like, it reminds me of some religious aspects, you know?
Right. And it's not heavy handed either.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's there if you want it to be. And if not, you don't have to like, you know, I could show this to anybody that doesn't give a shit about that kind of thing. And they could just watch it as purely a nice little tight clone science fiction sort of film,
mm-hmm.
which is good. One of the last questions that I had on here was, there's a sequence where Sam says, we're not programmed, we're people, understand? And my question is, you know, what is this? Is this a little bit of Duncan Jones commentary? Because he came from commercials and he was a commercial director, and that's what they're trying to do, is the commercials try to program you and try to make you buy certain things.
Yes.
And so I wondered if that was something explicit that he was, you know, kind of trying to rebel a little bit with this being his first feature, and, you know, or if it was just something that's so ingrained to him, you know, in his mind, it just kind of came out subconsciously.
I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I really do. I really think it's a little bit of both. And the fact that, the process of harvesting this helium-3, you have this one person basically doing this job and basically being treated unfairly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he gets secondhand information. He has no direct contacts. But he works, you know, he works hard, and in return he receives nothing.
Right.
And he has no contact. And so that person becomes a cog in a machine with nothing. And so, you know, so like that, so Sam loses his humanity because of his job.
Right.
And so that's why I think when the other Sam clone gets to leave, he breaks that down. You know, he's like, we're people. You know, we're all people, because in real life, folks get caught up like that too. You know, we have people nowadays that, you know, that have either a difficulty finding work or have a situation where they have two or three jobs just to maintain and survive in the lower class,
mm-hmm.
and not get ahead. And so you just feel like a machine, because you get up, you go do this job, and you eat real quick, you go to bed, get up, do it again. It's just process, yeah. process.
You just have this joyless routine that you're doing.
Right. And even to the point where, you know, Sam's non-work routines are really routines, because it's all he has. Like, you know, when he's like, you know, sculpting, you know, with the wood, he's doing like, you know, the wood sculpting, or checking his plants.
Right.
It's not something, I don't think it's something he enjoys as much as it is really a chore to take his mind off the other chore that he has to do every day.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I like that. I like that that's the sort of, you know, from just one little line and just, you know, the end of the film, you can extrapolate and make it feel like, wow, you know, that's how I'm living, instead of taking time to appreciate what's around me and to appreciate the people that are around me. I'm going through this mindless activity and just doing it to pay the bills. And, you know, I really like when films are able to make you think about your own life.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of films can't do that. And I really think that Moon does do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. You know, he has to watch old TV shows. You know, so he doesn't know what's out there. You know, does he get to read books? And if so, what kind of books does he get to read? I don't think he gets to read anything.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he does.
You know, there's no, you work this job, but there's no mental growth. There's no personal growth. There's no, you're just that cog. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know, you drive out to the harvester, you pull the canister, you take the canister, you drive back, you drop it off. The end. That's all you do. You make a log, which really isn't truly a log, and you call it a day.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And again, I like how it's so only from his perspective. You know,
yes.
To where there's this huge world, and he's just this one little cog in the machine. And, you know, they set up everything else around with different corporations. And like I said, with the chair and what that could be. And, you know, they have all of these different things going on. And then the film ends with him breaking through that and the news kind of discussing what, you know, the ethical dilemma and all of this sort of thing. And he just leaves it there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. It's like, you know what? It's not. I like it when filmmakers say it's not my job to tell you what happens next.
Right, right. And those are some of the best movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to mention that we haven't brought up? That's sort of the extent of my notes.
I'm trying to think. The scene where the sick Sam realizes that he's not going to make it.
Mm.
And that, because originally the second Sam was like, listen, you're going to make it. We're going to put you in this harvester ship that has the canisters and whatnot. And you're just going to go. And he was, you know, in the sick Sam clone was on his deathbed.
Mm-hmm.
And they come to this realization for like the longest time. Yeah. They worked together, but sometimes they didn't really get along. But there was this really human moment where he's just like, listen, I'm not going to make it. And even if we have another clone here, you know, it's going to cause a problem, you know, because the Eliza people, they're not coming to, they're coming to fix the situation, but they'll kill us.
Sure. Yeah.
So
they're aware of what they are and that they're disposable.
Right. So let's just put me, you know, I'm dying anyway. Put me back where I am, because if you don't, the Eliza people will see, you know, if you don't do that, the Eliza people will know that something happened and everything's just going to go to shit.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they have this real human moment where they're driving back to the wreckage and they're talking about, you know, the first time they met Tess and, you know, and they share the same memories. And before, you know, the other one can finish, you know, he dies.
Right.
And he puts him back in the ship. But, it's a great movie. Like I said before, it's great science fiction. It really is. It's like saying some of the best science fiction can also be a lot of the great science fiction is real minimalist.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and cause they've made the film for $5 million and that $5 million had a majority of it had to be spent on that set.
Yeah. You would think so. Cause I was thinking about that, you know, cause you can look at it and be like, oh, well, this is a set. I mean, what else would it be? But I think that, you know, I looked at all the detail of it all. You know, when he's banging around trying to find the compartment.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, searching all these different things. And I'm like, God, someone had to make all of this.
Yeah. Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And I was like, this isn't an all green screen. Like they had to create this.
Yeah. And with the moonshot, like, the terrain shots of the moon and whatnot, I think that was all done with miniatures.
Oh, okay.
If I'm not mistaken, a lot of that was done with miniatures and probably like a little bit of outdoor moon scenes. According to the trivia on IMDb, outdoor moon scenes were shot using practical effects. Shooting took place over 8 days, according to Cinefex magazine, July 2009. So I got to find that copy of Cinefex because I want to see, you know, how much practical, how much of the practical effects were used in those outdoor moon scenes, and how little of it was CGI.
Yeah, I like that. I like that it's not CGI because, you know, it just feels like a real thing. It just feels different.
Yeah, yeah, you know, like the original Alien film, or even with Aliens,
yeah,
for that matter, the second one. Because if you go see Aliens in a movie theater, when the Space Marines land, they had those heavy terrain vehicles and whatnot, and they're like, you know, coming out of the ship. You watch that now, you're like, okay, yeah, that's a model. But you watch that on a big screen in a movie theater, that ship, that, you know, that terrain vehicle was huge.
Sure. Yeah.
So, you know, so the scope of it, you're not really paying attention to the fact that it's a model.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's, yeah, I mean, you do a film well enough, you don't pick out, you don't nitpick. You just watch it and enjoy it.
Right. You know what I like about the Alien films, the first two, I guess I should say, is that the first one is just your sort of tight, quiet horror film.
Mm-hmm.
And then your second one is like a big, loud action film.
Yeah.
You know, I just love the sort of, it's the same world. It's mostly the, you know, it's the same thread with the same character, but they can be completely different types of films. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's what science fiction affords you, is to be able to do that.
Yeah, you can flip the genre within the genre, and as long as the story is told well, there's no problems.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, anything else, Sean? Are you ready to wrap this baby up?
Let's go ahead and wrap her up.
Okay. If you have any comments, suggestions, or movies you would like to hear us talk about specifically for Podshots, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod, where you can follow me over there. I'm @ericwilliams79. We also have a Facebook page for the show. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. Just like our regular show, we're going to have Amazon links on our website, which is plainlabelpodcast.tumblr.com. If you click on the link and purchase Moon, we do get a little bit of that money, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. And since you're already over on our site, just below the link is a little Amazon box. And if you click on that box, it takes you to Amazon's homepage. And what I want you to do is bookmark that homepage and use that whenever you buy anything from Amazon. That does give us a little bit of cash to help us pay the bills, help us pay for our movie tickets and our Netflix and all that kind of thing. And it doesn't cost anything extra. So I do want to thank Sean once again for coming on and discussing Moon. If people wanted to hear more from you or get in contact with you or listen to a podcast or two, where could they do that?
All right. For what I do, besides the 9-to-5, I work for a company called Action Lab Entertainment, a comic book publisher. Been publishing books for over 3 years. If you want to see the kind of things that we do, you can go to actionlabcomics.com. You can also go to Comixology. Excuse me. You can also go to Comixology.com or use the Comixology app to purchase our comic books. Single issues are only 99 cents. Nice. All the time, every time. No $2.99, no $3.99 for single issues. 99 cents, people. It's a bargain. A great load of titles, diverse selection of genres. You know, great stuff from Jamal Igle's Molly Danger to Dave DeWanch's Space Time Condo to The Final Plague to Princeless to Fracture to Bo Plushy Gangster. Just anything you could think of, we've got it. So you can go check us out there. I do a podcast, The Black Box. It's infrequent. We have over 100 episodes. Also on that same feed, we have Donnie Salvo's Tales from the Attic. You can find that on hhwlod.com. On iTunes, you can find it under The Black Box Podcast. And the podcast is a pop culture podcast. It ranges from movie talk, comic book talk. Lately, I've been on a big hip-hop kick for like the last 6 months. So I've been talking a lot of hip-hop, old school and new school. And on Twitter, you can find me at Sean, SHAWNRPryor, PRYOR.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with a discussion on the classic Western, Once Upon a Time in the West.